This is from a manuscript by Dr. Arnold Mindell, a Jungian analyst in Zurich, Switzerland, formerly an American. He and his wife are both Jungian analysts. He has a master's degree in physics from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. He went to Zurich about 15 years ago. And this is a chapter from what was a book about the works of Carlos Castaneda, particularly the book Journey to Eastland. The last chapter of the manuscript is titled The Death Walk. This will be the last crossroad of yours which Gennaro and I will attend. I must also add that few warriors survived the encounter with the unknown that you are about to have. Not so much because it is hard, but because the novel is enticing beyond any statement, and warriors who journey into it find that to return to the tonal, but a world of order and noise and pain, is a most unappealing affair. The last crossroad is the point at which the individual leaves the known world of consciousness and ventures outward into the tasks of whatever his individuality will bring. He stands before some monumental experience, such as loss, winning, love, illness, death, vacation, or immense dreams. Returning from these experiences and beginning to live again in the world that everyone else inhabits is not appealing. Before one even leaves ordinary life, difficulties and resistances appear because the psyche knows the return from powerful experiences cannot be guaranteed. The ego may be too weak to manage the experience, or one's life may be such a chaos that its depressing significance bogs down the return. Or one could be endangered by potential inflation, identifying with visions of an ally, a wise old man, a dream demon, or even an idiot seen on a vision quest. Some people must avoid the unconscious because they simply do not have the strength or the love for life to return. According to Don Juan, quote, if you choose not to return, you will disappear as if the earth has swallowed you. But if you choose to return to this earth, you must wait like true warriors until your particular tasks are finished. Once they are finished, either in success or defeat, you will have command over the totality of yourselves. Returning from horrendous experiences to the real world is difficult because spatial freedom is limited. Today, when the idea of finding a quiet spot in the mountains is becoming a dream rather than a reality, returning to the earth may not include living by oneself, being compelled to live in the midst of humanity. Man has unconsciously set up his own spatial cramp through overpopulation. He can no longer avoid himself. But Don Juan is saying that this very cramp can help one to reach the personal goal of having, quote, command over the totality of oneself, end quote. That is, living one's double and one's death. According to Don Juan, quote, the important thing, however, is your task. That is the bestowal made by the teacher and a benefactor to their apprentice. I pray that you will succeed in bringing your tasks to culmination. End of quote. Don Juan once told Castaneda that a teacher has a special relationship to his apprentice. A teacher never searches for his apprentices. The personal powers, that is, the unconscious of both, set up a relationship so that force, desire, or intrigue is never a bond. Thus, though the student's task may appear to come from the teacher, the bestowal of life's tasks grow from the relationship which the student's power has established. Since power chooses the teacher, then power chooses the task. The relationship, therefore, harbors the future tasks. Since the work of the teacher is to explain and help the student to experience his total self, inevitably the task of the student is to actualize the teacher's efforts, to live the double, and to consciously experience one's totality within the context of life's work. If this task is made conscious, then the worldly defeat and success and failure and ambition only attain secondary significance. Without this consciousness, the world becomes an opponent, which distracts the apprentice from his central task, namely that of living his personal myth or the story of his ally. De Niro explains the psychology of living out of this task and of completing one's life. Quote, waiting to fulfill that task is a very special waiting, and I'm going to tell you the story of a band of warriors who lived in another time on this mountain. Whenever a member of that band of warriors was thought to have committed an act which was against their rules, his fate was put to the decision of all of them. The culprit had to explain his reasons for having done what he had done. His comrades had to listen to him, and then they either disbanded because they found his reasons convincing, or they lined up with their weapons at the very edge of a flat mountain, very much like this mountain, where we're sitting now, ready to carry out his death sentence, because they found his reasons to be unacceptable. In that case, the condemned warrior had to say goodbye to his old comrades, and his execution began. Right there, where that ditch is, there was a row of trees on the mountain in the story. Beyond that point, there was a thick forest. After saying goodbye to his comrades, the condemned warrior was supposed to begin walking down the slope toward the trees. His comrades then cocked their weapons and aimed at him. If no one shot, or if the warrior survived his wounds and reached the edge of the trees, he was free. They say that there were men who pulled through unharmed. Let's say that their personal power affected their comrades. A wave went through them as they were aiming at him, and no one dared to use his weapon. Or perhaps they were in awe of his bravery and could not harm him. There was a condition set up for the walk to the edge of the trees. The warrior had to walk calmly and unaffected. His steps had to be sure and firm, his eyes looking straight ahead, peacefully. He had to go down without stumbling, without turning to look back, and above all, without running. Quote. De Niro explains his story. If you decide to return to this earth, you will have to wait like true warriors until your tasks are fulfilled. That waiting is very much like the walk of the warrior in the story. You see, the warrior had run out of human time, and so have you. The only difference is in who is aiming at you. Those who were aiming at the warrior were his warrior comrades. But what is aiming at you is the unknown. Your only chance is your impeccability. You must wait without expecting reward, and you must aim all of your personal power at fulfilling your tasks. End of quote. Gennaro's story of the warrior's death watch is central to the teachings of Don Juan. Gennaro's story is also central to his life and typical of his complexity and his relationship to the world. There is little doubt that the story of the warrior's fate has an archetypical or universal significance. I'm now going to review the story's potential meaning and hope to take it out of the eternal spaces of fairy tales and place it among the possible events of everyday life. The warrior symbolizes the personality which is able to consciously follow the unconscious. What is the meaning of the band to which he belongs? The band stands for the collective of the warrior. This is parents, family, partner, children, town, state, nation, and even the world of men and the universe. In order to know what crime the warrior has committed, we have to see what its possible laws are. The rules of the parents, for example, consist of their hopes and goals for his life, their own unlived lives, and their unconscious limitations and commitments. The rules of family are based upon a culture. These rules determine what a conventional parent, child, or lover must be and restrict Eros relationships in fantasy and fact from stepping across the predetermined regulations. The rules of one's band imply that each member must support the goals of the group and feel positively toward the other members. A warrior's religion has printed beliefs and his profession a particular code of ethics. His nation has special enemies which he must hate. The world of men insists that man is the supreme animal. The Western world insists upon the linearity of progress and upon advancement, while the East views time and permanence as an illusion. One day, the warrior, by his very nature, is going to break one of the rules of his collective, If he is a warrior, according to Don Juan's definition, he's flexible and fluid and unpredictable. If he's fluid and unpredictable, then he himself will not be able to guess what he will do in a given situation. Under the circumstances of following the Tao, the body, or the unconscious, he is going to do not doing to the doing of his collective. He is therefore bound to break the routines of even his closest and most sought after friends. Perhaps he will fight an enemy at one moment and in the next join him. What a difficult world for him. Without even wanting to, the warrior breaks laws. His judges see only his egotism in his acts, not realizing that something forces him to obey an unseen purpose. I'm not talking about the ordinary criminal for whom robbery is the final goal, but a reasonable man who, because he knows his ally, cannot go along with the governing cultural principles of consciousness. He is fated to fail at some of the world's requirements in order to succeed elsewhere. Naturally, the collective must be true to itself and fulfills its functions. It must catch him in his criminal acts and sentence him to trial, just as he has sentenced others when he acted as a member of the band. Now it is he who enters into a life and death struggle with the collective. His life is now being prosecuted. Whereas the unconscious man simply feels persecuted, the wise warrior realizes the value of his collective jury. It challenges him to face the consequences of his acts and take personal responsibility for their significance, or should I say, his significance. It is relatively simple to follow the unconscious when one is alone on the desert. Perhaps one meets the ally most readily on the outskirts of civilization. But the meeting with one's personal myth is only the first step in becoming oneself. The next step is the death walk, the knowing and courageous act of living within the double and within the rules of the collective. If the warrior has some objectivity about his fate, he will claim that he has no choice about his crime. He had to do it. If he had not committed it, he would not have listened to the voice of his ally or his double, which demanded acceptance. If he had not listened to the whisperings of his double, experienced and expressed the impulsiveness of his body, or obeyed the commands of his death, he would either have become neurotic or died. By not following his body, he would have said no to himself, and yes, once again, to the demands of adaptation. There was no middle way to protect him with reasonableness. He either had to do A or B. Doing both A and B were impossible for him. The time of his crime. If he is true to himself, the warrior will complain to his journey, to his jury, that he was compelled to do what he did. In order to join a band in the first place, he learned to accomplish acts, to know their meaning, to decide ahead of time what was good and what was bad. Being a warrior complicates things. Now he must live paradoxically. He must know what is expected of him, and yet live by controlling his fear and letting his wings out slowly until his abandon directs him. Not even he can predict exactly what he will do until he has done it. In the past, when weakness prevented him from living as an individual, he was motivated to find security in the opinions of his world. But now his so-called inferiorities are transformed and related him to another world, which his worldly inadequacies have become his strengths. What can the jury say? If it is a collective, then it says that he does not understand the warrior's turbulent story of the ally, that he is guilty of acts which disobey the rules. Guilty. What else could happen? At best, the jury could say that the warrior is free to try another time, but this would just be putting off the final confrontation. Somewhere, sometime, he's going to learn following the unconscious does not ensure collective approval. If he is naive and human, he may feel as Christ did on the cross, that his unconscious had betrayed him. The warrior, however, is prepared and expects the collective to object to his being. There may be certain benefits in following the way of the warrior, but one of them is certainly not worldly recognition. The warrior's most protective and final shield is the shield of knowledge. He may argue on his own behalf that his crime led to a higher good, and that its apparent, than its apparent evil indicates. To be sure, he may not have known what he was doing while he was doing it, since his acts were under the influence of an unknown teleology. In retrospect, he can see that his criminal acts were trying to bring about a new man, a new center in himself and in the collective. He must argue this case because his shield shows him the significance of his own acts relative to the history of his collective. His acts were directed not only by the drives of his personal fate, but were inspired by the revolutionary and innovative force of his personal myth. Somewhere, before his crime, he sensed that the collective view of reality was too limited, his view of himself too restricting. He watched his fellow men balk at time and strike out unconsciously at their neighbors, having mistaken them for the persecutors, responsible for personal torment. The warrior, being only a man, could see no solution to his world's problems. Only the blind acts of his double gave him temporary and unexpected relief from his world's ills. His shields of knowledge presses him retrospectively to force the jury to see personal life in the perspective of world and geological history. Against the background of this immense scene, his acts appear as the rebirth of the shaman archetype and the pattern of a future man. Through being himself, the warrior stops the world and inadvertently crashes against time, the ruler of Western civilization. The fourth dimension, symbolized in dreams by cruel authority figures, has had a life of its own and has become more than a measure of reality. It has become a powerful but antiquated dictator whose greatest deeds may well turn out to be forcing the individual to stop the world and prepare for a future universe which only astronomers discuss, the death of planet Earth. By living his double, the warrior sculpts himself and steps out of time and space. He replaces the fallible housing of gross materialism with the security of being in harmony with an unpredictable rhythm. One day when the real Earth crashes into the sun, annihilating life, the warrior's way will be the only way, a simple rainbow transporting the individual to a new existence. It is unlikely that the individual warrior will be able to discover the shield of knowledge at the necessary moment. Even the warrior in Gennaro's story does not defend his acts, but is simply sentenced and begins his death walk. What is the death walk? The non-warrior will take everything which has been said until now about the collective and believe that it refers only to the outer world. Gennaro stresses that the band of warriors is the, quote, force of the unknown, end quote, not the reality of a worldly straitjacket. The collective, the jury, and the band are the guardians of the warrior's own psyche. The average man unconsciously projects these figures onto the world and paranoidally thinks that his judges are really his family, his friends, his parents, children, partner, boss, priest, police, president. He does not realize that his band is the unknown, the force of personal collective attitudes, and that his success and enjoyment of life depends upon whether he has confronted his own rigid perfectionism, his fear, and his negativity towards spontaneous behavior. According to Gennaro, the warrior must walk sure and firm, without stumbling, straight ahead, peacefully, without turning to look back, and above all, without running in front of his psychic firing squad. The only possible way for the individual to be able to do this is by having wrestled with the unknown. Better yet, the warrior must succeed in setting the strength of his death against the force and limited vision of his own normality. His death will advise him to abandon the idea that the unconscious makes him extraordinary or unacceptable. Extraordinary is a term defined and derived by the collective. As far as the unconscious is concerned, the warrior's only job is to become himself. Only by knowing his body and his mind can he have the strength to hold the collective at bay. The warrior hears his ally and follows, expecting the voice to adapt to resist his way. But he insists that this voice allow him to live, just as he lets that voice continue. The fate of a warrior is both very simple and complex. He has no determined worldly goals and no specific form. The ordinary man bemoans this fate and seeks a security in the ignorance and the recognition of his world. Gennaro is different. He says, the fate of us here has been to know that we are the prisoners of power. No one knows why us in particular, but what a very great good for you. How free is the warrior? Can he follow the regimens of his consciousness because they seem at first to be the easiest of all? His unconscious forces him to follow its design. Life is an immense risk because it is imprisoned by fate. If he relates to his ally or double, he lives and sees his fortune. He has energy and lives life, a strange death walk in front of a firing squad to completion. What a strange world. We are born unknowingly into a situation so full of danger. We are like Tolkien's hobbits who were called to the great hunt, though they hated to take off their slippers and leave the warm fireplace. But leaving the womb does not mean living in a motherless world, devoid of human companionship and understanding. Don Gennaro answers Castaneda's feelings about the coldness and the aloneness of the warrior's life. He says the life of a warrior cannot possibly be cold and lonely and without feeling, because it is based on his affection, his devotion, his dedication to his beloved. To explain himself, Gennaro storms and dances on the earth. Don Juan, Castaneda's unfailing teacher, explains the mysterious Gennaro as follows. Gennaro's love is the world. The earth knows that Gennaro loves it, and it bestows on him its care. That's why Gennaro's life is filled to the brim, and his state, wherever he will be plentiful. Gennaro roams in the paths of his love, and wherever he is complete. A warrior is always joyful, because his love is unalterable, and his beloved embraces him and bestows upon him inconceivable gifts. The sadness belongs only to those who hate the very thing that gives shelter to their being. End quote. The path into the wilderness of individual development does not lead toward coldness, aloneness, and isolation from the world, as Castaneda suspects. The opposite is true. The warrior's way leads him to the paths of his love, the basic elements of Eros. For the American Indian, the earth still belongs to the pantheon of heavenly force. The earth is still a great spirit, a mother with whom one can talk, which has life and speaks the language of one's heart. For the Indian, the earth is the origin of personal life. The average man feels there is more than one reality in which he lives, sleeps, dreams, dies, and hallucinates. Throughout their adventures with Castaneda, Juan and Gennaro have stressed there is but one world, and this is the earth. Whatever happens, happens here. This is the scene for life and death, sleeping and waking. It is the stage for the mundane and the synchronistic. A dream or a vision which is not related to this earth has not been real. The warrior realizes that the earth is all there is. That is why he lives so fully in the here and the now, and why ideas of death and life are replaced, along with the processes of sleeping and dreaming, by conscious acts in the now. It may well be that the warrior realizes the value of the earth, but after all, the warrior is an ideal. It is only natural for the person who has experienced the uncanniness of the ally's autonomy to search for a human companion who will console his lamentations through empathizing with his fate. Yet this search, a natural human quality, is a frustrating excursion, because only an archetype can soothe and defend a human being from a god. Don Juan is saying that only the earth on which one travels, the path, the heart, can share this way, the earth can share his personal myth. The warrior is not in any way comparable to a wise guru, a clever magician, or a mystic. Gennaro and Don Juan are not self-important beings who reflect sentimentality an experience that acts as full of earth-shattering meaning. Just the contrary. Such gravity is foreign to them. But as usual, Castaneda presents himself in the ends of tales of power as the fool who whines sentimentally over his last moments. Does Castaneda make a theater out of the situation as he really does not understand Don Juan's teachings? Don Juan says to him, "Look at you. You've gotten to the sorcerer's explanation, but it doesn't make any difference that you know it. You're more alone than ever, because without an unwavering love for that being that gives you shelter, aloneness is loneliness." Don Juan's systematic teachings, psychological explanations, theoretical insights are insufficient to transform the individual, because these sorcerer's explanations are not life itself. If theories are not lived on earth and felt in the body, explanations only fill empty beings who are striving intellectually for consciousness and therefore fear that individuation spells out loneliness and otherworldliness. Don Juan's teachings, psychological insights, and theoretical explanations are necessary but insufficient to transform the individual. For without an interest in life itself, these explanations, like the personality they excite, spin endlessly in empty space. Only the reality of this earth, define it as you will, can bring to birth the massive potential of the human being. Before consciousness has run out of gas, one lives in a non-relativistic world dominated by time, space, and explanations. One clings to theory and strives wearily for consciousness. But soon the old Zen story comes true. Before Zen, a rock is a rock. During Zen, and the excitement of the sorcerers and the psychologist's explanation, the rock is not a rock. Man is not a man, either. He's filled with demons, dreams, and allies. But after Zen, if the student gets as far as the man of knowledge, psychological theory fades away as man becomes man again, while synchronicity melts into just another experience. No one really fails to act out the Zen plot, because in the end, the intellect is doused as the sorcerer's explanation falls asunder under the onslaught of death and penetrating experience. Presumably, Don Juan is recommending that it is best to abide by explanations while they are useful stepping stones to something else. But don't forget to live existence before it is too late. Drop the sorcerer's explanations once it has been fully understood, and finally relate to life. Then it will be clearer that without an unwavering love for reality, aloneness or individuality means loneliness or isolation. Don Juan's lessons are not quite heard by Castaneda, who somehow misconstrues the teaching. He assumes them to be magically capable of producing a misunderstood genius who stands at the brink of some crucial trick which will unlock the mystery of God knows what. Castaneda introduced the tales of power with the following poem. The conditions of a solitary bird are five. The first, that it flies to the highest point. The second, that it does not suffer for company, not even of its own kind. The third, that it aims its beaks at the sky. The fourth, that it does not have a definite color. And the fifth, that it sings very softly. The warrior is not a solitary bird, or a sad, lonely individualist following the conditions of an immutable fate. In fact, the warrior is not one thing at all. It could be many people. I recall Don Juan's description of the impeccable Gennaro, pampering his apprentice Pablito. Don Juan said, "Gennaro pampers him, Pablito, like a child, but that is the way power set it up to be. Gennaro gives Pablito everything he's capable of giving, and one cannot wish that he would do something else. One cannot criticize a warrior for doing his impeccable best." Obviously, Gennaro is not the solitary bird that Castaneda thinks a warrior becomes. Gennaro is simply a man who relates to life. The warrior is only a human being, free to be anything under the conditions of the moment, a Zen master or a pampered mother hen. Don Juan emphasizes the importance of the last lesson about relating to the earth's reality before the apprentice embarks upon the individual route. In the moment of embarkation, in the moment of fear and solitude and proximity to one's own being, only then does the lesson make sense. In the first moment, after running out of collective time, the earth appears in perspective. Before having the courage to be oneself, the world appears as the prison in which time and space are the guards. One sees that life was dampened by the gravity, the brutality, and the insensitivity of inner collective voices which preached unnecessary seriousness without objectivity. But when the individual is on the verge of becoming his or herself, the earth rises luminously out of the oblivion and becomes a companion as a fog lifts on the nature of reality. In that moment, the earth agrees synchronicity with the warrior and becomes his double.